From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, our weekly look at politics and policy. This is our second one this week. It's a twofer week on the podcast.
Because it was such an exciting week.
Because there's just so much going on. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio, and that is Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, as we are trying to take a look at what happened this week as the week comes to a close. So let's start off talking about the thing that we probably least want to have to sit here as Capitol reporters and deal with, a special session of the legislature.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm two for two in the prediction department, right? Didn't I say there would be no lame duck session last week or on Monday?
In other words, you're 0-for-2 in the prediction department.
Oh, excuse me. 2-for-2 in being wrong.
Exactly.
Right. Two for two
in being wrong, 0-for-2 in being correct. I predicted the stock market correctly. You did not.
I don't think,
and I don't think I had a prediction on the special session.
No. You courageously set that one out. But
so what's going on? Lame duck, apparently.
Although, you know, it hasn't happened yet. The governor has implied this week that he will call the legislature back for a lame duck session after he gets back from Ohio to campaign for John McCain.
On Halloween, no less.
Yeah. Didn't he do that? Wasn't it Halloween when he went last time?
It was the weekend before the election, right. And there are still people who think that Arnold Schwarzenegger may have had some impact in helping Bush win Ohio in 2004 because Columbus was a great big target media market. But anyway.
And that's
so he's going
with the Arnold Classic, so he's got a lot of that. But I think he's just got a really good trick-or-treating route cased in Halloween. Someone in the governor's office can get back to me.
I wonder if he's going to parties as Todd Palin. No, I can't quite see that. It's going to go down that path.
I'm making the mental picture.
But suffice it to say,
maybe he's going as Sarah Palin, or no, that's Rudy Giuliani.
We're way off of the special session topic here, so let's drive this car back into the right lane on the road. Okay, so but we got word this week that the governor certainly seems poised to bring the lame duck legislature back. Which, as far as anybody that I've talked to, I can't find anybody really remembering anything that like this that it would have happened before.
Right. Although, you know, I talked to some Democratic leaders this week and they seem to maintain, hey, look, until there's a deal, what's the point of bringing people back? I mean, why call people back, especially people whose political careers may basically be over since the new legislature will be elected on November 4th and sworn in on December 3rd? Why bring them back if we're not going to have a deal? So, you know, and I haven't heard anything that suggests that there is a deal.
Yeah.
I know that there's been some analysis that the rationale is that, you know, that there are a lot of lame ducks now who will feel comfortable voting for a tax increase potentially. But
that's assuming that their problem was political and not philosophical.
Well, and I don't know what's changed. Weren't they lame ducks 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, however long ago we got a budget?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure what's happened between then and now that makes them realize that they're lame ducks all of a sudden.
Well, and the other part that I think is difficult, and, you know, with all due respect to the governor's staff, it's hard to see. The problem is serious and it's real. And we'll talk about all kinds of economic things in a moment because we want to talk about a few others. But it's hard to see the substantive impact of bringing these guys back of the lame duck legislature, bringing them back on like what, November 15th or something like that. There are all kinds of dates floating around. Apparently, they still want some financial data too, though, and waiting 2 more weeks. I mean, you know, it is true that every day we wait, we have less options to resolve our problems. But I think 2 weeks might be it may not be that fast, in which case do you wonder how much of this is symbolism?
Yeah,
we're on the problem.
Right. And we're addressing it urgent as the urgent problem it is. And clearly, you know, there are problems we're seeing around the state. Cities are laying off temporary workers. In Sacramento, we saw non-union employees are forced to take a furlough. Take one unpaid day a month, I believe, which can't be good news for the mayor in her reelection bid.
City government there we're speaking about,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Since Sacramento becomes the ubiquitous term for state government as well.
But cities around the state are dealing with these similar problems, and they're taking urgent action. And the idea being that the longer they wait, the longer they wait, the shorter time they would have to realize any savings they would get from making these cuts.
Obviously, the more you do sooner, the better. But again, the dynamics of a lame duck legislature just seem really, really difficult to figure out. All the things we've talked about, frankly, you know, my feeling too is that, you know, do these people really speak for their constituents at that point? Their constituents have elected other people. They'll be moving boxes in the Capitol. I mean, you know, this is a very odd, you sit in the desk today, I'm going to be sitting in the desk in 5 days, you know. How does that play out? So,
yeah, and it's, you know, and we're all going to be speculating then who the next Secretary of State is going to be, who the next, you know, we'll be, a nation will be fixated on prognosticating about the new president-elect's cabinet. Or who knows, maybe we'll be in recount mode. What do you think?
I don't know. It would be interesting. But, you know, the federal impact here, I mean, let's talk about that for a moment because, you know, there's a lot of talk on the federal level that post-election there's going to be some kind of other stimulus package incentive to be done. But I've also heard chatter that, you know, perhaps if the Democrats win a strong enough majority in Washington, they may not feel the need to immediately come up with some kind of plan. You know, they may want to have a little more time now that they've got a new larger Congress that'll be sworn in January to wait and get the package they want, in which case, even again, you know, how can you make plans in Sacramento if Washington's not making those plans? So,
well, but I mean, there are things you could have a state stimulus package, and I believe that's something that the Speaker Karen Bass has talked about. Am I right in that?
Yeah, she has, but I don't know what that is. I you know, she's made some broad comments, but I don't, you know, I mean, does that stimulus package, you know, in general terms, we typically traditionally think what, tax cuts or tax
refund
breaks.
Check in my mailbox.
But the state, I mean, how can the state afford that at this point?
Right.
So who knows? But suffice it to say, it sounds like we're going to be back here very soon after the election watching another budget problem. I mean, we're somewhere $3 billion at the least in the red. We could be more by the time we get it all figured out. Some have said upwards close to five. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we are talking about more cuts. You know, I just don't sense any great desire or urge on the part of Democrats to come rushing back to Sacramento to adopt some sort of, you know, a proposal again of one-time money, you know, through creative budgeting acrobatics again, through revenue accelerators and other things to help fill this gap. I think that a lot of Democrats would rather wait. Wow, it's contagious. Rather wait until after December.
And finally, one more political element to that. Let's say for sake of argument, the Democrats pick up seats.
Right.
Then they may want to wait until the new legislature is set because then they have a better chance of getting what they want, maybe.
Perhaps. You know, I should note that as bad as my predictions have been on this podcast the last 2 weeks, they're probably not as bad as the state Democratic Party chairman, Art Torres, who predicted earlier this week that Democrats could gain 2/3 majority in both the Senate and the Assembly. I don't know anybody who thinks, unless, you know, Art Torres knows something that all of my sources don't. I don't think anybody thinks that Democrats could actually pick up 6 seats in the Assembly and 2 in the Senate.
Well, I don't know anyone that has said it in the Senate.
Right.
The Assembly people say if everything fell the Democrats' way,
6.
Either you got there or you got awfully close. But in the Senate, you don't even really have the races. And frankly, because you don't have a Democratic challenger, ostensibly in one competitive district in the Senate, which is Abel Maldonado down the coast.
That would be the only other one. So yeah. 26 max in the Senate. But I mean, if you assume everything that we know of as being in play in the Assembly, 78th and the 80th Southern California districts currently held by Shirley Horton and Bonnie Garcia, both Republicans termed out. Democrats are targeting those two. They're targeting the Guy Houston seat in Contra Costa. It gets a piece of Contra Costa.
East Bay.
And East Bay and Central Valley.
Yeah.
That would be 3. They would have to hold the Nicole Paro seat, so that would keep them at 3. They're making a push for the Alan Nakanishi seat here in the Sacramento area down to Lodi. That would be 4.
So that's 52.
Right.
That still leaves you 2 short of the magic number.
I mean, they would have to – I mean, I heard rumors they were talking about spending money against Cameron Smythe out in the Magic Mountain area near the, you know, where, what's the name of
it? I can't help you. When you get down to Southern California, I'm really not very good.
Saugus.
Sorry.
What's it? Santa Clarita.
Yes.
Yeah, Santa Clarita.
We're sharp today, aren't we?
Yeah. As a napkin. You know, and there was some talk that the Democrats might spend money against Assemblywoman Audra Strickland. I think that has more to do with the Senate race down there, where Strickland's husband, Tony, is running against Hannah Beth Jackson.
But Democrat. That would put enough, if all of that was true, that would get you to the magic number if everything fell your way. But that is assuming so many things would happen. Yeah. And as we know, the registration numbers just really aren't there in those districts. A lot would have to go sour. Although I will say, and this is not a total transition to another topic, but I will say, I mean, you know, the poll numbers look pretty darn bad for the man at the top of the ticket in the Republican Party in California this week. I mean, a 23-point lead for Barack Obama, according to the PPIC poll that was released this week, in which case you just wonder if you have a tidal wave of Democrats and Democratic-leaning voters turning out, who knows?
Right. I mean, you know. I didn't think there would be a Speaker Gingrich in 94. So like I said, I'm out of the prediction business again. But
Completely.
Except I predict that the Democrats will not get 54 seats. We'll be back after the election.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're 0-3 at that point, we should really talk. So before we leave the economic issues, you guys in Capital Weekly reported about an impact that I think is going to be watched more and more as we're sitting here, which is all of what's happened on Wall Street and the impact on pension funds.
Right. PERS, the nation's largest institutional investor, the public employee retirement system, once had about $260 billion in assets. Reported this week that their assets are down to about $192 billion. That's a big chunk of change that they're missing. And the way that pension systems are set up in state government and in most local governments that are linked to PERS, it's a defined benefit. So you're guaranteed to get a certain amount of money. So if there's a shortfall in the stock market in terms of paying out that benefit, if the fund is not performing well on Wall Street, the money has to be made up by the employers. In this case, that means the state government and local governments. It's going to be another drain on cities and I believe there are some counties that are PERS counties as well that are already strapped for cash. So we alluded to some of the layoffs that are already going on the local level, and this is going to be another financial burden placed on these cities and counties and on the state.
And there had already been so much concern about as he drinks his iced coffee there into the microphone.
I tried to do it away from the microphone.
Didn't work. But there's already been so much concern in recent times about the pension funds and about concerns over unfunded liabilities and, you know, state on the ultimate hook for trying to figure that out. And it only exacerbates the problems and may exacerbate the call for really looking at the pension funds and some kind of change in the system. It's hard to do because we know labor unions and others have opposed it in the past, but maybe there's some impetus now to reexamine that issue.
Page and Keith Richman. This is something that the governor tried to take on in his 2005 special election. The initiative ran into some big political problems when it was revealed that it would affect the widows of fallen peace officers. And so he pulled that initiative. It was not on the ballot, on the special election ballot. And the issue has sort of gone away since then. But I think it's something that the governor still would like to be able to have a conversation about.
Yeah. I mean, remember, he had a Blue Ribbon Commission examining the whole thing, too, headed up by Jerry Parsky, longtime backer and chairman of the UC Board of Regents.
Right.
And they put a whole set of recommendations on the table that kind of have gone nowhere so far. But who knows? I mean, you know, you wonder what kinds of outside forces could force people to reexamine things. You know, we didn't think we'd be talking about a tax commission. You know, a year ago to reexamine some fundamental issues about how California gets its taxes. And then the bottom fell out, in the California budget this year. And now we're talking that kind of reform. So who knows?
But there's no issue more important to organized labor than protecting the pensions of their workers and moving away from a system where their benefit is guaranteed into a system where they put in a set amount of money every month. And however the market does, you know, that's what you get back. That would be very, 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 very tough politically, especially with more Democrats in the legislature.
Well, let's talk about interesting politics. We alluded to the poll numbers earlier when we talked about when I mentioned Obama and McCain in California. So the Public Policy Institute of California, one of two statewide public polls that tracks what's going on, that and the field poll. PPIC came out with what I think will be their last poll before the November election, or at least maybe we haven't got all their data. Should call them. We'll find out.
We got the big propositions.
We got the big.
There might some of the others.
So the headlines were Obama up by 23, as we talked about, and then Proposition 8, the proposed ban on same-sex marriage, losing, according to PPIC, 44 yes, 52 no. Right. But a gap that may have narrowed some since PPIC surveyed it before. Right. There are lots of internal private polls out there that suggest it could be closer than that. But we also got some new campaign finance data, and what we're getting close to $60 million spent for or against this issue. I mean, this is really dominating the airwaves. It's dominating the discussion outside of presidential politics.
Right. We don't have a presidential race here. We don't have the 2008 presidential race is not here in California, but vestiges of the 2004 race are here, where there were gay marriage initiatives all over the country, and a lot of people think that was part of what propelled George Bush to victory in 2004 is rallying the conservative base. Certainly, I think as we turn on our TV sets here in the closing weeks, we're not going to see any Obama or McCain ads, but we will see a lot of Prop 8 ads. There are a lot of initiative ads already on the air. There's going to be more here in the next couple of weeks.
Well, and let's talk about, you know, I mean, without going too far and risking, you know, the ire of either side by talking about
it. Oh, come
on. But Prop 8 has become a debate about education.
Right.
I mean, you know, we have largely sidestepped the issue of people's feelings about same-sex marriages. And we have now, it has now become a debate through the television ads, with the yes side obviously pushing this message, about the impact on schools and teaching same-sex marriage. And the no side says it's a misreading of the state education code. And the yes side said, oh, no, it's not. And, you know, back and forth and back and forth. But it is a very interesting and I don't know what to make of it, but a very interesting strategic decision by the yes campaign to focus the attention somewhere else rather than a philosophical morality conscience debating thing about same-sex marriage.
Right. And you know, perhaps it's just coincidence then that this week we saw another large donation, $1 million, go into the No on 8 campaign from the California Teachers Association, which is another interesting strategic move. I think there was
Most people don't see a nexus between CTA and same-sex marriage.
Right, and certainly Dick Ackerman doesn't, the outgoing Senate Republican leader, who wrote an op-ed in his hometown newspaper, the Orange County Register, criticizing the Teachers Association for spending money on this campaign. Kind of ironic when the Yes campaign, which I would imagine that Senator Ackerman supports, I don't know that for a fact, but I would imagine, is focusing on this education message, and yet Ackerman is bashing CTA, saying that this initiative has nothing to do with education.
Of course, you know, their reasons for supporting it could be outside of the argument that the Yes side is making about the impact on education. It's hard to know.
Right.
I mean, there are all kinds of games of chess going on here about who's aligned, traditional allies on either sides and what it means. But, I mean, definitely outstripping everybody else in terms of raising money here on both, you know, like we said, a combined $60 million close at this point with the new data. Nobody else is even close. But let's go back to the poll quickly. So the poll also showed data on Prop 4, which is parental notification for a teenager, a minor, having an abortion, and Proposition 11, which is a big change to how redistricting is done every 10 years. Both of those, what I think really the news out of that is that there are a lot of undecided voters still on Prop 4 and Prop 11, and you are 10 days or so out of an election. It's interesting.
And frankly, I mean, Prop 11, that doesn't surprise me. Redistricting is a little bit of an arcane issue.
The complexity of it.
Yeah, and it's not something that we're all talking about as our, you know, around our kitchen tables. Prop 4, it surprises me that there were that many undecided voters. It's not only something that's pretty basic and easy to understand, should minors be allowed to get an abortion without parental consent, but it's something that California voters have voted on twice in the last four years?
This is its third time around.
Yeah, so this is an issue that's very familiar to California voters. And you know, it does raise the question, too, I mean, going back to gay marriage just for a minute, whether, you know, you look at the parental notification issue, how they've come back time and time again, and essentially they've committed to coming back until they pass this thing. You wonder whether this is the last fight over gay marriage we're going to have at the ballot box here as well.
Yeah.
We've had a couple here this, I believe, 2002, right, was the last time we had the gay marriage ban that was not a constitutional amendment, but Prop 22.
Prop 22 in 2000, yeah.
2000,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Same subject, very different measure, but same subject.
Right.
Well, and I think it'll be interesting to see, I mean, the backing up to the big picture for some of this, we get the last snapshot of voter registration data on October 31st, on Halloween.
Right.
We get the formal final numbers before the election from the Secretary of State's office. It'll be interesting to see how many new voters have come on board, where they've come on board, what party or not party, because you know everybody knows that elections are decided by who shows up.
Right.
And it'll be very interesting to see what drives what particular groups of voters to the polls on November 4th.
Yeah.
The presidential race, Prop 8, who gets the benefit of what, you know, what happens to the rest of the measures on the ballot.
And what happens to the legislative races as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what's the dynamic of the voters, you know, by party or by ethnicity or by region? You know, it'd be very fascinating to see, because that'll really be the determining factor in some of these real close races.
Yeah, and I was just looking at these numbers yesterday. I don't remember the raw numbers, but was comparing the September 04 numbers to the – or November 04 to September – the last vote statement of vote we got from the Secretary of State's office, or the September numbers. And it looked like decline to states – Democrats had increased a little bit. They'd gone up about 1%. Republicans had lost about 2 or 3%, and declined to states had increased. Essentially, most of the loss in the Republican column had gone to decline to state. Democrats have been very aggressive throughout the primary campaign and also in these closing days to register voters nationwide. A lot of that has come from the Obama campaign and their surrogates. And be interesting to see whether it has. Obviously, California has not been the greatest focus for them, but the party has touted, you know, changing a number of counties. I think there are four more counties now that have majority Democrats registered. San Bernardino. There are a couple others.
And some of that data is based on what the party itself has said. We haven't gotten the final official data from the state, but exactly. Big voter registration drives.
Right. But even the official numbers from the Secretary of State, I believe there were four more counties that have already flipped to majority Democrat that were at least plurality Republican before.
You know, one of the factors that I think people will be watching too, that I'm curious as a reporter to watch, is we talk a lot about presidential politics in election years, about what happens on the East Coast and polls closing and races being called or states being called, and the trickling impact or domino impact on the West Coast when people see, you know, if a race has been called, you know, the infamous, Jimmy Carter race, and people didn't go to the polls in California, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But what might happen this could be a close presidential race, but you know, there are a lot of indicators out now that suggest, you know, Obama could be pulling away, you know, in key states that could kind of, you know, foreshadow something big happening. No offense to the Republican listeners to the podcast. Your man's still in it. Give him we'll give him a pat on the back. But either way, though, the impact of that presidential race on what voters might decide not to go to the polls in California, and then the impact on all these other proposals. You know, if Obama's winning huge on the East Coast, does that mean some Democrats don't go to the polls, or does it mean some Republicans don't go to the polls in California? Then what's the impact? And vice versa, if it's a close race, or, you know, the dynamics are fascinating, even though we'll never know the answer to it.
And the other piece is the early voting. You know, early voting has been taking off around the country, and people I talk to in California as well, they say typically that the first week of absentee voting, the first week that comes in traditionally has been the more conservative vote.
Because those are the people who voted absentee even before it became a big fad.
Right, the permanent absentee voters, of which there are about 5 million now in California. But that the first ballots they get tend to trend more conservative, and then as Election Day approaches, they get traditionally a little bit more liberal and now the absentee vote used to be more conservative overall. Now it just about mirrors the Election Day vote. But what Democrats are seeing this year is that even in the first wave of balloting, that their numbers are higher over 2 and 4 years ago. Now, you know, this may have something to do with the excitement of the Obama factor. You know, nationally in exit polls, typically they take three waves of exit polls. They take morning exit polls, afternoon and evening exit polls. And in, I think, 18 of 20 states where there were primary elections, the first wave of election polls, of those exit polls, Obama fared better than he did overall. So would tend to suggest that Obama voters are energized, they're excited, they're voting earlier. So I don't know if what we're seeing...
Look at 2004.
Right.
I mean, exit polls that just totally called the race the wrong way. You
right.
know, everybody thought, oh my gosh, John Kerry's won, and it couldn't have been anything different.
Right, right. Well, but I, you know, I do think that that if we see a situation where, you know, polls close on the East Coast at 5 o'clock West Coast time and Florida gets called and Virginia gets called and Pennsylvania gets called early for Obama, if that happens, you know, it could have an impact in California. I think the networks now, given what they went through in 2000 and what they thought, you know, again, those early exit polls, they took a little bit more caution in actually calling races on election night. But I think that there will be less of a tendency to call things early, and that might end up helping some Republicans out here in California.
And yet, I think the real impact, as we began this part of the conversation, is ballot measures.
Right.
Because you really wonder what will happen to some of those, because you know, all the watchers, and we'll take Prop 8 because that's the most obvious ballot measure that's getting attention and spending money
and one that has a kind of a partisan tilt to it. I mean, traditionally, where you would think that more Republicans would be inclined to vote for Prop 8.
Or a strong philosophical issue, conservative, liberal
that meshes with party affiliation
traditionally, right. But you know, everybody watching a race like that knows that you know, certain voters tend to skew certain ways.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's widely believed that younger voters tend to be more accepting of same-sex marriages,
right,
and therefore may vote no on Prop 8 more. You wonder about different ethnicities, you know, ethnic groups, you know, African Americans, Latinos. How do they feel? Are there conservative religious factors at play? And I just have to think that all of those campaigns really would have to have some nervous factors about the presidential race being over by the time it came to California, because you really could skew who shows up given our polls being open to 8 o'clock.
Right.
It's 11 o'clock East Coast time. That's a very long – if there are acceptance speeches on the air, I mean, you know, who knows what will happen. But it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, and the Yes on 8 campaign has implied that perhaps a large African-American vote might actually help their measure, or, you know, that – and there have been some divisions in among African-American pastors, you know, over this issue. You know, we'll see when it's over. I think the narrative is always best written in hindsight.
Of course. Yeah. We're always smarter the next day than we are before.
Except in 2000.
We weren't smart for a long time. Actually, we weren't smart at all after that one was over. But you might want to take your own advice there, since you missed the stock market thing and you missed the lame duck session
prediction. I predict that Obama will carry California.
Boy, you went out on a limb on that one.
Go.
You on a tread pick
go.
A number.
I know, Republicans. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Sorry, but.
Don't call. Don't harass Anthony.
Then again, maybe it's the best thing Republicans have going is that I've called it for the other guy. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It may be a lucky charm.
Yeah.
Well, I think that'll do it for this time. We'll come back next week, and who knows what we'll be talking about then. I'm sure more election stuff, and who knows, we may know some more about the state's finances. It almost is like we talk about the same thing every time.
Well, California politics doesn't change that dramatically.
And isn't that the appealing part of this podcast?
It's that you can do it in your sleep, yes.
Yeah, you can listen to us while you're mowing the grass or something, and you know, if you didn't hear every word, don't worry, you know where we're going.
We'll say it again next week.
Yes. Thank you for listening to our generalisms. For Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.